The high U.S. military suicide rate is a grim reminder of the realities of 10 years of war. On average, one American soldier commits suicide every day. That's alarming. But how do you explain the high suicide rate among soldiers who have not been deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan? Nearly a third of recent military suicides were among troops who had never deployed. 43% had been deployed only once. Pentagon correspondent Mark Thompson writes about it for Time Magazine's cover story this week. He joins us from NPR in Washington. And Mark, what did top military brass tell you about why the suicide rate is so high among troops who've never been deployed? And is there an explanation they're falling back on?
No, there really isn't, Monica. That's part of the problem. Obviously, if they knew why, they could fix it. You know, they've been trying now. It's been going on for perhaps 5 years since the Army's adjusted suicide rate has topped that of the civilian world, adjusted for age and gender. And for many years, the Army was very proud that its soldiers had a lower suicide rate than that of the general population. And so they are quite vexed by it.
The highest suicide rate is among young enlisted service members, not older officers, and half had seen specialists to try to get help, which is astonishing. Do they look at that as a failure of their systems to not work well enough?
Well, I think the issue goes like this. Every suicide is unique. It has unique stressors that lead an individual to kill him or herself. And some individuals seem immune. The trouble is, without a unique biological fingerprint or anything else to say this person is going to kill him or herself, all of the solutions, such as they are, have to be of a blunderbuss approach. It's not like, you know, a spotlight where you say, aha, this is the problem, because different things work for different people. It generally is a pretty inefficient use of scarce Pentagon dollars, which are already at $2 billion a year to tend to the troops' mental health.
Right. And you write that $2 billion a year is 4% of the total medical budget. And yet you say it's not making a dent and no program outreach initiative has worked to stem this tide. Is there a sense of frustration at the Pentagon or determination over how to address this problem?
Well, there's some of both. We interviewed General Peter Chiarelli, who retired in January as the Army's number two officer. And for 4 years, he made it his personal crusade to combat the scourge of suicide that was enveloping his service. When he left, he remained frustrated because while there was a slowdown in the growth, basically it continued to grow. But there are other generals still in the military who think, you know, he focused too much on it. And although they won't tend to say this publicly, they do sort of shrug their shoulders and say, you know, suicide, as tragic as it is like the tides. It will come down. We need to do all good efforts. But the notion that we can either eradicate or sharply reduce it when it is growing actually also in the civilian world is a fool's errand, they contend.
And we know that deployment increases the risk of suicide. So does traumatic brain injury and PTSD. But you write there's some new thinking about the effect of deployments. Tell us about that.
When you go over to a war zone, you have a great deal of camaraderie, of esprit de corps, generally speaking. This binds you to your battlefield buddies. What is striking is that when you come back home, for lots of soldiers, that goes away. It especially goes away for those in the Guard and the Reserves who don't return home to a major Army post or military installation with all of its mental health facilities and instead go back home, you know, to their hometowns. And what we found in one of our stories, one of our young Army officers, Captain Ian Morrison, was the sense he had been in Iraq for 9 months in 2011. He had flown 70 combat missions, and it was Groundhog Day after Groundhog Day. And when he came home, according to his widow, Rebecca, he just seemed out of it. It was as if the slack time was a burden and not a comfort. And you see that a lot in cases of soldiers returning from deployment.
Your Time Magazine article tells the story of two soldiers. One is of Officer Morrison, the helicopter pilot. His wife was a mental health professional, is that right? And knew he needed help and tried to help him get it.
Yes, I mean, she encouraged Ian to get help. And he was somewhat atypical of the cases I've reported on and covered in that he was very eager to get help. He didn't have to clear the hurdle of stigma. He plainly was beyond that in the final week of his life when, on six different occasions, he sought help from the Army at Fort Hood, Texas, and was either shunted aside, said, no, we can't see you, said, come back next month, there's a two-hour wait. Perhaps if he had been seen and dealt with quickly and effectively, might have been enough to break the chain that led to his suicide.
Well, what does his story say to you?
The story says what General Chiarelli told me it says. That is, we don't have enough mental health professionals in the Army. When somebody reaches out for help, he must not be told in the perfect world that, sorry, come back in 2 hours, or sorry, come back next week, or be put on hold, as Captain Morrison was, for at least 45 minutes before he killed himself. That's a lot of money. I mean, General Chiarelli mentioned a study underway somewhere that seemed to be having pretty good effects, but it required an initial consultation of 2 hours. And we, the U.S. government and the U.S. taxpayers, just has not allocated sufficient funds to allow that sort of intense mental health counseling to occur.
You also tell the story of Dr. Michael McCadden, a bomb diffuser who then went to medical school to become an Army obstetrician. And he wasn't deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan, but he had served in Bosnia. Tell me what happened to him.
Well, Dr. McCadden was an interesting case because, you know, a Mustang going from being an enlisted soldier to an Army officer. He had had a history of depression, perhaps for 7 years. He had a family history of suicide. His biological father killed himself. So he knew he had these issues, and he sought help in his Army career, perhaps not as much as his wife Leslie thought he needed, but he knew he had a problem, and he was trying to deal with it. But ultimately, when he got his residency, his workload really intensified. And he began lashing out at his wife and the children, the three children. And Leslie went to her husband's commander without her husband's knowledge and told her, pleaded with her, get my husband some help. Encouraging him isn't good enough. You can order him to get that help. And the Army resolutely, on at least two occasions, said, no. Frankly, Leslie, this sounds more like a family problem than an Army problem. And, you know, a year later, year and a half later, he ended up hanging himself in the hospital in uniform.
A very sad story. Mark Thompson of Time Magazine, back in a minute here and now. Welcome back. We're talking about how the U.S. military is struggling to reduce suicide among service members. We're speaking with Mark Thompson, Pentagon correspondent for Time Magazine, whose cover story this week is titled, One a Day, Every Day One U.S. Soldier Commits Suicide, Why the Military Can't Defeat Its Most Insidious Enemy. And Mark, you profiled two soldiers who both killed themselves on the same day this year, Army Dr. Michael McCadden, who hung himself, and whose wife begged the Army to order him into counseling, but they refused, and helicopter pilot Ian Morrison, who tried to get help, but was always put on hold or told to come back later. What did their deaths say about military culture on suicide?
Well, plainly, you know, the flip side of this coin, Monica, goes like this. If you take everybody's depression, anxiety, as a real threat to do harm to him or herself, the Army would never be able to fight. I mean, everybody struggles with problems. Everybody has them. Some people share them. But you can't, you know, put all these folks into highly intense counseling. So obviously, gatekeepers of every type, be it a boss, be it a psychiatrist, be it a spouse, has to know when to take certain things seriously. Unfortunately, you know, folks are always going to drop through the cracks. There's going to be someone that kills himself, and friends and family are stunned. In our two cases in this week's Time Magazine, the reason we picked them was because they died on the same day and because their stories illustrated different ends of the same spectrum that we see. Number one, you have someone really reaching out for help and not getting it. The onset of his anxiety and problems came up pretty quickly after returning from Iraq. And then you have the doctor. And the doctor had wrestled with these problems for years. He wanted to deal with them, but not at the cost of in any way compromising his excellent Army career. And it fell to his wife to go to the Army and say, "Hey, Army, you are my husband's entire life. You can make this better if you will order him into care." And in that case, not getting enough.
Well, in the case of McCadden, he had a real fear that he wouldn't be promoted, it would get on his record, and there does seem to be a documented fear that you might not advance in the military or get a job outside the military if your mental health condition goes on your record. And there's something called a unit assessment when a soldier steps off a plane from deployment. What do they ask?
Did you see this? Did you do that? Did you experience this? Soldiers will tell you they're a joke. It's sort of a checklist kind of thing. It's better than nothing, one told me, but not a lot better. I mean, it's to sort of give mental health professionals back at their home post a snapshot of what they went through. And that obviously can sort of guide any treatment that might be needed. They do it several times when they get back initially and then a month or two later to see if there's been change. But once again, it's done in a very automated way. It's a huge bureaucracy. And because it's not like cancer or, you know, something that there are biological markers for that you can say, aha, he's got it, but no, she doesn't. It's very subjective. As they say, it's a self-assessment. And if you're concerned, you don't want to be perceived as being self-assessed in a poor way, you may very well fudge your answers.
And I understand as we're winding down the war in Afghanistan, as we're pulled out of Iraq, the military is going to downsize. How much does job security within the military play into soldier anxieties? And will this reality make the problem worse, do you fear?
Well, we chatted with some Army mental health professionals, and we said to them, hey, the war in Iraq is all but over. The war in Afghanistan is almost over. It will be in 18 months or so. You know, not to be too crass about it, but isn't that good for the suicide rate? Doesn't that mean the suicide rate will go down? And I was surprised that one senior former Army psychiatrist said, well, not exactly, and here's why. Number one, after all of the time spent at war for a large portion of our military, they're going to have to get back and readjust to their families. And oftentimes, you know, tension between partners can be a stressor for suicide. And secondly, the military budget is going to be cut. Soldiers are going to lose their jobs, perhaps before they had intended. The cruel ones will be those who are, you know, halfway toward retirement with a pension, who are basically told, we don't need you anymore. And that, too, will be a big stressor. And the other point on that score, of course, is both TBI and PTSD can be seen as seeds of trouble down the road. They don't immediately sprout. Some never sprout, but others sprout a month, 6 months, a year, 2 years after they're planted.
As we've been discussing, this high suicide rate, on average, one soldier a day kills himself, and they're primarily male, is vexing the Pentagon. And I'm wondering, have they turned to the outside and had any experts outside the military assessing the military suicide prevention programs?
Oh, yes. I mean, if there's a suicide expert in this country, he or she's been contacted by the Pentagon. They are plainly reaching out everywhere. You know, everything from using therapy dogs to aromatherapy to acupuncture to massage to yoga. All of these alternative therapies are being tried or being explored. The military may be in many ways a hidebound institution, but when it realizes it is dealing with an insidious enemy, it will bring all forces to bear on trying to conquer that enemy. Secretary Robert Gates, before he left last year, said military medical costs are eating us alive. They are now up to $53 billion a year, of which mental health is about 4%. The Army and the VA is spending $50 million on a five-year study led by the National Institute of Mental Health to try to figure out the roots of suicide and try to curb it.
Mark Thompson is Pentagon correspondent for Time Magazine. Thank you so much for speaking with us about this important topic.
You're welcome, Monica.
Still ahead today, how 27 cities in Pennsylvania ended up in dire financial straits. Back in a minute, news is next, here and now.